Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Wednesday, June 10th. I'm Taylor Heckert. Petersburg's first traditional canoe in a century recently completed its maiden voyage. After launching out of Petersburg late last month, a small group of pullers paddled the local tribe's new canoe for over 100 miles in southeast Alaska's waters, camping and visiting villages along the way. It's a tradition known as Journey. And it concluded last Tuesday when a group arrived in Juneau for the biennial Celebration Festival. KFSK's Olivia Rose was there at the beach for the canoe landing ceremony and spoke with some of Petersburg's pullers about their journey to Celebration.
Over 200 people, many wearing regalia, are gathered on a sunny afternoon at Auk Recreation Area, the former site of a Thlinkit village. 10 canoes are floating near the shore, each taking turns for traditional protocols before landing on the beach. Among them is Petersburg's killer whale canoe, or Keet Yelk in Thlinkit.
My name is Shoshani, my English name is Brandon Ware.
Brandon Ware is the skipper. He shouts an introduction from the water.
Good excuse for having us. We're so grateful to be here. Forgive me if I miss protocol. This is our first journey in over 100 years.
The 39-foot, fiberglass, Thlinkit-style canoe is Petersburg's first in a century or so. This was its first multi-day journey and had its inaugural launch out of Petersburg, another big first, just 10 days earlier. Soon, after introductions, permission is given and all the canoes land on the beach. Dozens of pullers from communities throughout and beyond the region are welcomed ashore. There's singing, dancing, drumming. Friends, family, and loved ones find each other in the crowd, hugging, taking pictures together, and congratulating the pullers on their arrival. Brandon Ware, the skipper from Petersburg, says arriving feels
bittersweet, man. This is the most incredible feeling in the world, being able to pull up and see everyone here. I had tears in my eyes when we were coming ashore. This has been a dream of mine since I was little. And to be able to see this and see it through, I can't describe it.
Only about 9 pullers signed up to paddle Keet Yelk through Alaska's Inside Passage, including his brothers. Saguch Billy Ware describes the moment as powerful for Keet Yelk and his community. He says coming all this way feels surreal.
I've crabbed and I've fished in these waters all the way from Petersburg to Juneau, but being able to take the time and camp on the beach like in Sumdum underneath the glaciers, it was breathtaking, it was amazing, and it really gave you a different perspective on just how tough and durable our people were and just the life that they lived. This has been an amazing experience.
The group did a number of traditional landings, like today's, while making stops at villages along the way. He says the first time they did after departing from Petersburg, or Sitka Kwan in Thlinkit, was especially meaningful to him.
We got to do the first official landing for a canoe out of Sitka Kwan in over 100 years, and I was privileged enough to do the landing introduction and just asked for the permission to be on their land, and that was an incredibly important moment for me.
That first landing happened in Cake, a village on Kuprinoff Island. The group ended up spending about 3 days there, waiting out some weather. For polar young Duane Gabe Dunham, it was the most memorable part of this journey.
Cake was, they were wonderful hosts, and they fed us every night. And while we were there after dinner, everybody got up and they shared songs and we all danced, but just people from almost a half a dozen different communities just came together, and it was a really powerful thing to be able to share with my boys.
Dunham says he joined this historic paddle from Petersburg so he and his two young sons could learn more about Thlinkit culture. There are a couple of other special moments on the 10-day journey that stick out for Dunham too, like when he earned a nickname from Billy and the group.
We got the paddle beaver over here. He chomped through two of them with the power strokes there.
Here's Dunham recalling the moment.
We were trying to break 6 knots speed in the canoe, and we nearly got there, but we were all paddling at about 110%, and we were working hard, and that's when I broke my second paddle.
Gooch Tala Victoria Moore paddled the canoe from Petersburg with her son, the Ha Gooch, Alex, who has autism. Like most of the pullers on Keet Yelk, this was their first canoe journey to Celebration.
He did great. I just so appreciate everybody helping me bring him to his culture and to Celebration, to my homeland here in Juneau. And man, what an incredible to be a part of the canoe that it's been over 100 years. That's pretty special to me, and that my son got to join me on that journey of, you know, making some new connections. So it's just beautiful. Ganeshish.
Over 100 years, 10 days, and 100 miles later, the journey is complete for the first traditional canoe out of Petersburg. Here's Saguch Billy Ware again.
And now we're out celebration. It's time to hoo-ha.
Keet Yelk was shipped home to Petersburg after the ceremony, and the four-day celebration wrapped up on June 6th. Reporting from Juneau with help from Yvonne Crumry, I'm Olivia Rose.
The city and borough of Juneau has finalized a budget for the next fiscal year, but it didn't come easy. Over the past few months, the Juneau Assembly spent dozens of hours debating how to plug a multi-million dollar recurring budget hole due to the tax exemption on food and utilities and the cap on the city's property tax rate that voters passed last fall. Those ballot initiatives created a roughly $10 to $12 million annual revenue shortfall going forward for the city. KTOO's Clarice Larson has been following along in the city budget process and has these three main takeaways.
Takeaway number one, the final budget closes one city facility and reduces funding to some services, but certainly not as much as originally expected. The talk of this budget season was whether the assembly would choose to make significant cuts to city services or close some facilities. Ultimately, the budget the assembly approved on Monday night keeps open Juneau's two pools, Diamond Park Fieldhouse, the Douglas Fire Station, and maintains social service grants. All were on the list of more than 40 city services and facilities up for potential cuts. The assembly took those topics off the chopping block after receiving a flood of public outcry. The budget does, however, reduce funding to the Juneau-Douglas City Museum by $261,000 annually, which will result in two staff members being laid off, and a drastic reduction in the museum's hours. That decision came despite more than a dozen people who testified in support of fully funding the museum. Mary Pat Wyatt says the loss of staff members would be devastating.
The museum without a director is like trying to lead an orchestra without a conductor, or running a school without a principal, or a town without a mayor. I ask that all current staff positions at the Juneau Douglas City Museum be retained, fully funded, to keep our heritage and history alive.
Assemblymember Maureen Hall and Paul Kelly attempted to restore the funding to the budget in the final hour, but their efforts were voted down. Along with the reduction to the museum, the budget also includes the closure and sale of Mount Jumbo Gym, and a reduction in funding to Travel Juneau, the city's landscaping budget, the Juneau Economic Development Council, and the Jensen Olsom Arboretum. The budget also eliminates an administrative support position in the city's administration department. And now for takeaway number two. The assembly approved some changes to taxation that are expected to increase city revenue, but by how much is unclear. The assembly voted to raise the city's sales tax cap on single-item goods from $15,000 to $50,000, with a caveat for vehicles purchased under $50,000. That caveat is that if you buy a vehicle for under $50,000, you would only pay sales tax for up to $15,000. So that basically means you'd pay about $750 in sales tax instead of $2,500 in sales tax. The assembly considered removing the tax cap entirely, which would have brought in close to $7 million in estimated revenue next fiscal year. However, representatives from Core Alaska Kensington Mine and Juneau Auto Mall testified against that, arguing it would disproportionately impact large industrial operations and people purchasing vehicles in Juneau. This is Steve Ball, the general manager for Kensington Mine.
Removing the cap would increase Kensington's annual tax burden by approximately $5 million, roughly tripling the sales tax we pay today, a significant and ongoing increase that would directly affect operational decisions and long-term investment.
The assembly ultimately voted against completely removing the tax cap. According to City Finance Director Angie Flick, it's unclear how much the change to raise the tax cap will impact the city's revenue for the next fiscal year. And that leads to takeaway number three. The city is not out of the woods yet with its budget problems. The budget the assembly approved relies heavily on savings and shuffling money from other city funding pots, rather than cutting services or increasing revenue to get out of the red. Assemblymember Christine Wall says that's a problem.
We have not cut enough, and it puts the city in a very precarious place now, given our fund balance size.
Without any major cuts or revenue increases this year, Wall and other assembly members cast serious concerns about the next fiscal year. If spending stays the same, the assembly is anticipated to face another $7 million revenue deficit that will need to be addressed. And that time around, they won't likely have as much in the piggy bank to fall back on.
our fund balance right now is one bad sales tax quarter away from having no funds to deal with our operating our expenses, let alone a major natural disaster or other disaster.
The fiscal year begins on July 1st. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
Life in rural Alaska is expensive, and for some workers, a paycheck still doesn't cover housing, gas, and food. A group in Nome hopes to change that by nearly doubling the city's minimum wage. The local proposal could go before Nome's voters this fall, and as KNOM's Ben Townsend reports, the campaign is being led by a group of high school students.
Renee Brown is a junior at Nome's ANSEP Acceleration Academy. During the school year, she also works as a special education paraprofessional at Nome Elementary School.
My coworkers are living out of Connex containers and they don't have like vehicles and they have to walk to and from work. Being a sped paraprofessional is a difficult job and it is really beneficial for those students. I think they deserve to be able to live and have vehicles and have a proper house. And I think that goes for anyone.
To help make life in rural Alaska more affordable, Brown and the newly formed Nome Living Wage for All Alliance wants to nearly double Nome's minimum wage, from $13 to $25 an hour. It's a dramatic change, but Nome Belt senior Kaya Kent says it's not as radical as it sounds.
I just think $25 is still way less than what's actually necessary to live in Nome. And we thought of 25 being the number because it's like a good middle ground to like slowly work up to becoming more.
According to the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, adults in Nome need to make at least $24 an hour to earn a living wage. But that's if you don't have kids. A family of four in Nome needs both parents making at least $28 an hour. Nome's largest employer, Norton Sound Health Corporation, already offers wages starting at $25 an hour. But entry-level jobs at grocers like Hanson's start at just $14, depending on experience. Kent is headed to college in Colorado this fall, but says she plans to move back to Nome when she graduates.
I don't want to come back to Nome and see even more people struggling than there already are.
Saru Jayaraman is president of One Fair Wage, a nonprofit coordinating minimum wage increase efforts across the country. She says she met the group of high schoolers at a conference in Berkeley.
Over a series of meetings, we helped them figure out what they wanted to do, figure out the process, bringing other people into the fold. And they're just such an impressive group of young women, and we're so proud to support them.
Jayaraman says One Fair Wages research found that 5 out of 6 workers in Nome already earn $25 an hour or more.
You're talking about maybe 15%, 17% of the population that would get a raise, but it's still important because as you raise the floor, then other people's wages do go up.
And with that extra income, Jayaraman says people can more comfortably afford goods like groceries and gas that are only getting more expensive.
Right now, prices are going up like crazy in Nome and across the country. Gas prices are insanely high. Tariffs have made food prices so crazy high. If you want people to continue to buy groceries at the grocery store, we do need an increase in the general population's ability to consume.
And with those bare necessities covered, Nome Belt senior Sarah James says people can tackle other, bigger problems.
So instead of thinking about, like, what am I going to eat for dinner? Or how am I going to feed my kids? They could be like start to think about climate change or politics or all these other things that seem to be like the most important.
The Alliance turned in a ballot petition to the city of Nome on May 21st. The city is reviewing the petition and an ordinance drafted by the Alliance. If accepted, the Alliance will need to turn in signatures from over 100 registered voters to get the wage increase on this fall's ballot. If passed, the measure would phase in wage increases over the next 2 to 5 years. In Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
The minimum wage in Alaska will jump to $14 on July 1st. The increase comes after voters passed ballot measure 1 in 2024 to gradually raise the state's minimum wage. The measure increases the hourly minimum wage in the state from $13 to $14. Next July, it'll rise to $15. The minimum wage will increase with inflation starting in 2028. The measure also ensures all workers accrue paid sick leave based on the size of the employer. Businesses with more than 15 employees are required to allow workers to accrue and use up to 56 hours of paid sick leave annually, while those with fewer than 15 workers must allow up to 40 hours. The measure passed with nearly 58% of voters in support. When it passed, minimum wage workers in the state were making $11.73 per hour. Several other states and cities are also increasing their minimum wages on July 1st, including Oregon, Washington, D.C., and Chicago. Even with the bump, Alaska has the lowest minimum wage across all West Coast states. For KFSK, I'm Taylor Heckert.